Well, in a Gallup poll in 2015 on the topic of job satisfaction, there were a series of questions that were asked to find the root causes of employee engagement at work. And it factors into employee engagement is measured by how much somebody enjoys their work, looks forward to doing it, and really puts their sincere efforts into success. Now, for most of us, it should come as no surprise that effectiveness or engagement has a direct correlation with management. That management component affects the overwhelming majority of contributing factors to job satisfaction. On a similar note, there was a separate study that revealed that one in two people, 50%, have left their job in order to get away from their manager to improve their overall life at some point in their career. That was a little shocking to see, but not too far-fetched. Some of you may have had that same experience. Now, the question that I found compelling was this one, and it had to do with this. What do good managers do to cause people to be engaged in their work? What do managers do to cause people to become actively disengaged as well, the opposite of that? Well, I'll tell you, it's not money. It's not financial compensation. It's something much, much simpler and at the capacity of every single manager. And it's something that should be within reach of every single employee. And it's this: by emphasizing individual strengths instead of weaknesses. That's it. In a word, encouragement is what makes the difference to the lives of everybody who has a boss. And by the way, everybody has a boss. The results of this study were very interesting. Now, when managers help employees grow to develop through their strengths, over two-thirds report they are engaged, that is, happy with their job, excited to be doing their work. And only 2% of people are actively disengaged. Those are the people who hate their job, wish they were someplace else. And the rest of those statistics are in the middle someplace. So we can see an overwhelming majority are happy with their job if their manager is managing to their strengths. But on the other hand, when people have managers who focus on weaknesses, drawing emphasis on what is broken and needs to be fixed, the statistics flip. When negative aspects are focused on, 71% of people are actively disengaged. They hate their job when their managers tell them that they're not doing something right and that they need to fix something. And only 1% state that they are actively engaged when that's the case. That's amazing. Now, some of you may reflect on that in your own lives as well. The simple practice of encouragement turns out to make a massive difference in people's lives. And it's not limited to people's work. I think we can all agree that this encouragement, being encouraged in any part of our lives, brings us more satisfaction as human beings. That's how we function as human beings. When we have positive reinforcement anywhere in our lives, we are more satisfied with our activities, more willing to put effort into it, to commit to a cause, to overcome challenges and obstacles, and come out the other side happier for it. This we can see with our friendships, the work that we do, of course, our marriages, the way we raise our children, our relationships with one another, and of course, with how we live our spiritual lives. For this reason, it's extremely important that we have a source of encouragement for our Christian way of life. If there's one thing that we need to be engaged with, it's our Christianity and our spiritual commitment. If we focus and receive messages that reinforce our weaknesses and ignore our strengths, it will make it hard for us. We don't want our Christian lives to be hard. We want to stay engaged. We want to overcome sin. And it's hard. It's difficult work. But we need encouragement to be successful. And when we receive that encouragement that we need, we will be more likely to stick with this way of life, to stick with the truth, to stick with the church, to stick with one another. So let's take a look at a few places that provide us a source of encouragement that we so desperately need. I want to start out with the story of Israel coming out of Egypt. There's a moment in the history of Israel that stands out to me more than any other, and it happens when Joshua takes over after the death of Moses. At this point in time, Israel, you can start turning to Joshua 1, by the way. At this point in time in the history of Israel, they as a nation had been wandering for 40 years in the desert. They were growing in number. They had a population in the millions. Places where they went, remember, they are a wandering tribe. The places where they went, they were not welcomed by the people living in those lands. These people were also stiff-necked. They did not want to obey the law. They didn't want to obey their leader, Moses, and transitioning to Joshua. Many of them, in fact, because of that stiff-neckedness, were not allowed by God to enter the promised land. And this is the position that Joshua had taken over. It was not a glorious job, and it came with a ton of headaches. You could imagine how how Joshua might have felt if being held accountable and responsible for all that was about to take place. So here's how it goes down. Looking at Joshua 1, I want to read verses 1 through 9. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give to them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. The book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. We can see what's going on here. Joshua has given a mission. He's ordered by God to take this huge nation to go into a foreign land that is currently inhabited by other people and claim that it's his and divide it up as an inheritance. Not an easy thing to do, which is why we see God pumping up Joshua over and over and over again. He's encouraging his ability to be strong and courageous. God is saying to Joshua, you can do this. That's the message. And what's the assurance that we see here? How does God back it up? Over and over again, Joshua is told that God will be with him. He will be right there. That this is God's doing. Joshua will not be forsaken. He will not be left behind. But God will be right there. As long as Joshua is willing to stick with the law and remain obedient to it and lead his people in that way. And this is the very same thing that we have in our lives. The same promise that God makes to Joshua about him never leaving us nor forsaking us is offered to us. God is with us. He's with you. When we follow him and are willing to commit to his way of life, we have that promise to rest upon. That's something that we should find encouraging. It gives us courage and strength. Let's go over to Hebrews 13 and read verses 5 through 6 and expand a little bit upon this concept of never being forsaken. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? That is encouragement that we draw from the words of the Bible. When we draw near to God, he draws near to us. As long as we are committed in the way of life and obedience to him, we will never be forsaken. Our strength rests in this. Our strength is the ability to overcome sin, to stay obedient through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. That is something we all have. Every single one of us who's had the opportunity to be baptized, we have Christ living in us, and that is our greatest strength. By that, we should be encouraged. Jesus Christ living within us and actively assisting us in overcoming sin is our strength. You have it. The words of the Bible say so right here. I'll cite Philippians 4:13 for you. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We have to remember that our strength is Jesus Christ. We have it. He is the one who strengthens us. The words are spoken right here. Our ability to overcome, to repent, to be forgiven, it comes directly from Jesus Christ. And with his strength, we are assured that we will succeed. Since we're in Philippians, I didn't have you turn there, but turn to Philippians 1. I'd like to read verses 3 through 9. Philippians 1, verse 3. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making requests for you all with joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. Just as it is right for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my chains and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you are all partakers with me of grace. For God is my witness how greatly I long for you all with the affection of Jesus Christ. Paul's words to the Philippians offer encouragement. He is expressing confidence in their ability to succeed. He gives them the encouragement that God will complete his project in transforming these people's lives. He's saying to these Philippians, you can do this. God called you for a purpose. What he's begun, he will finish, if you let him do it. Now, discouragement, the focus on our weaknesses, is the tool that Satan uses. We remember what the effect of discouragement is. When we reflect on the introduction that I mentioned, discouragement turns into active disengagement. That's how people turn away. But we have a means of protecting ourselves against this. When we read about the armor of God in Ephesians 6, there's one particular part where we are instructed to take up the shield of faith. Do you remember what that shield of faith does? It quenches the fiery darts of Satan. Darts themselves are not big, and they don't do that much damage all by themselves. But when they are lit on fire and land in a place that where fire can spread, they do a ton of damage. That's what discouragement is. Those negative thoughts and messages that try to tell us we can't make it, they will drive us away and destroy us. And it takes faith to extinguish that. Our faith needs to be anchored in the truth, which is much more encouraging and endures forever. That truth is this. It's the truth that God is with us and will never forsake us. It's the truth that we have the strength of Jesus Christ himself, giving us a way of overcoming sin, being forgiven, and having eternal life. And it's the truth that God believes in you.